I'd like to thank the organizers for offering me the opportunity to speak today. So what I'm going to talk about is some of the work that we've been working on as part of the Tritici Coordinated Agricultural Project, which is a multi-institutional project across the country to incorporate genomics tools into wheat and barley breeding programs with the end goal of developing cultivars that are tolerant to changes and climate changes as those start to occur. So I just wanted to reacquaint everyone to this slide that I'm sure everyone has seen before. But barley was domesticated about 10,000 years ago, and through that process, we had these early domesticates that had less genetic variation, and then over the process of breeding over the past 100 or so years, we have modern cultivars, which are quite successful, but they also resulted in even less diversity available for continued crop improvement and for dealing with various threats to various crops. So I'm going to primarily focus on barley today and the barley breeding program at the University of Minnesota. And so this is the basic pedigree of the malting barley, six-row spring malting barley pedigree at the University of Minnesota. And you can see that the number of founders in this particular program are quite few. And as you move from 1950 to 2008, you can see that there's a very narrowing of the genetic base that led to some of the more recent cultivars. This is primarily due to the malting and brewing industry having a very narrow sort of profile for the malting and brewing that they will accept in their the brew house. So in addition to this this sort of narrowing of the genetic base, we see a drop in the actual production in the state of Minnesota of barley. So we've gone from about 1 million acres or so to about 100 to 200,000. So this is a huge drop due to a variety of different, I think this is the wrong talk, but anyways, due to a variety of different things. So one of them is Fusarium head blight, which is a major issue in barley and in Minnesota. And so what happens during Fusarium head blight is you get the accumulation of mycotoxins, which the malting and brewing companies have a zero tolerance for. Another issue in barley production is the fact that the climate is starting to change and barley is being moved out of the sort of area where it normally is grown. It's moving more north and moving west. And finally, the fact that soybean is now becoming more of a competitive crop in Minnesota. So what this brings me to is we needed some way to try to increase the amount of variation in the Minnesota program as well as in programs across the country. And so my colleague Brian Stephenson had collected 318 wild barleys from across the world, and these red dots are from the Middle East area of the world. Those red dots are the location of where he collected those accessions, and we wanted to try to mine those particular accessions for new alleles. And so this particular collection has a wide diversity of that's shown here in terms of phenotypic diversity. We have diversity in leaf size. We have diversity in spike morphology as well as pathogen response. So one of the issues with dealing with wild species and wild relatives of cultivated lines is there's a variety of different traits that inhibit the direct use of these particular lines. And so one of those traits is an inappropriate photoperiod response, which is shown up. I don't know if I can handle this, but anyways, up in the upper left-hand side here, inappropriate photoperiod response. We also have a brittle rachis. So if you have brittle rachis, the plants shatter in the field and you can't really harvest them. And also in terms of seed size, the seed size of wild barleys is actually quite thin and small compared to the six-row barley on the right and compared to the two-row barley on the left side. So we need to try to figure out a way to incorporate the variation that's in wild barley, but also deal with some of these domestication traits and to try to use those beneficial alleles in the breeding program. And so there was a particular approach called advanced backcross QTL analysis, and this was an approach that was pioneered by Steve Tanksley back in the 90s. And the basic idea here is you take a wild relative or unadapted plant and cross it to your cultivated line that you actually has grown quite widely. You take the F1 and backcross it to the cultivated line. Take the backcross one, backcross it again. You have BC2 sort of lines. You can then derive lines from those. And you see at the very bottom we have chromosome 4 in barley, and there's like 98 different lines of, and this is chromosome 4 barley at 98 different lines profiled here, and you can see that there's actually quite a few different locations where the wild barley genome is integrated into the cultivated barley genome. So the basic idea here is to try to couple QTL detection and crop improvement, and to try to uncover favorable alleles that are obscured by unadapted traits. But the problem is that when you have biparental populations, you only capture a small amount of the genetic diversity that's in the wild barley, and also there are fewer effective recombination events. So you're going to have about, in a back cross two, you're going to have 87% of the recurrent parent found, and so that's going to reduce the amount of recombinations. So the other sort of approach to mine beneficial alleles is using nested association mapping, population design, and this was pioneered by the Buckler group around 10 years or so ago. And you take a set of diverse founders and you cross it to a single genotype, and you then derive families of recombinant inbred lines. This particular approach allows you to sample many diverse lines. It minimizes your population structure. It nests diverse genotypes within a common background, and it has higher power and also higher resolution. So this is all really good. But the problem, though, in terms of using a wild relative or wild species or unadapted species, it is confounded by unadapted traits. And so the recombinant inbred lines that you're going to evaluate are going to be very difficult to evaluate in the field because they're going to have a lot of deleterious sort of or unadapted traits, and it's going to be difficult to evaluate them for phenotypes that we're interested in. So the overall goal is to combine the strengths of advanced backcross QTL population design with the nested association mapping population design to mine beneficial alleles from wild barley. And so what a talented graduate student in my lab, Liana Nice, did is she took Brian Stephenson's wild barley diversity collection of 318 accessions, and she identified 25 accessions that captured the diversity of this entire collection. And so down on the left-hand corner is a neighbor joining tree of all 318 accessions, and the lines that she chose were the ones that are shown in red, and what she chose were lines that actually captured the maximum allele and geographic diversity of the entire wild barley diversity collection. And of these 25 parents, they contain about 90% of the total genetic diversity in the wild barley diversity collection. In addition to the genetic diversity and the geographical diversity, she also looked at she also tried to maximize a set in terms of pathogen resistance. And so the wild barley diversity accessions are listed on the left here, and the various diseases that they provide resistance to are listed along the top, with the most green being the ones that are most resistant. So we have this set now of 25 accessions that exhibit a very high level of genetic diversity, geographic diversity, and they show resistance to a variety of different pathogens. So we wanted to then combine this advanced backcross and nested association mapping approach, and so we call this the advanced backcross nested association mapping population design. And so what we did was we took Rasmussen, which is a six-row spring barley from Kevin Smith's breeding program, and this is an elite line, and we crossed it to these 25 accessions. We then made a backcross back to Rasmussen with the F1, and then we did another backcross with the BC1 individuals, and we took 796 of those BC1 individuals and crossed them back to Rasmussen. For all of you in the group that are this audience that make crosses with corn, you could probably imagine this wouldn't take very long, but the amount of effort that these almost 800 crosses took was every single day for 4 months. And so every day we had to go out to the greenhouse and make crosses to generate the set of families that we generated, and in the end we had 796 BC2 lines. We had about 27 to 39 individual lines that traced back to these individual 25 wild barley accessions. During the process of selfing, six-row spike morphology was selected. So Rasmussen is a six-row spring barley. All the wild barleys are two-row, so in the process of developing the population, we converted it all to a six-row population. So then we used three marker sets for mapping. So each of the parents, the 26 parents, and all of the lines in the population were genotyped with 379 SNP markers from a custom Golden Gate assay. The parents were then genotyped with a 9K SNP assay. And then the parents were all exome capture and sequence. So the very first set of markers, the 379, were used to develop a skeleton map of the population. And the 9K SNP markers and the exome capture SNP markers were used to impute onto the population. So for the 9K markers, we had around 4,000 markers that could be imputed. And for the exome capture, we had over 250,000 markers that could be imputed on the population. So this particular material then provides a really solid and robust genetic system to mine beneficial alleles that come from wild barley that have been integrated into cultivated barley. And so our expected wild barley allele frequency in this population should be 12.5% across the genome. And this is a quite sort of complicated plot here, so I'll try to walk you through it. So the expected is 12.5%. Along the top, all the WBDCs numbers, those are each of those is an individual family of either 27 to 39 individuals. And the white in the middle of this plot is about 12.5%. When you go into the red, that's increase in the wild barley alleles. And when you go to blue, that's an increase above expectation or below expectation in the six-row cultivated barley. And so you can see that there on chromosome 2, there's actually a very low level of wild barley allele frequency, and that corresponds to where the six-row locus is located in the barley genome. And so so we can see that we've selected for six-row during the process of developing the population. We see that it's actually very low in terms of wild barley allele frequency. On chromosome 1, we see a very high level of wild barley allele frequency. This probably corresponds to a gene called VRS3, which is involved in six-row morphology. And it comes from the wild barley parents and likely confers a slightly larger seed size to six-row barley. So you can see the rest of the sort of genome is about 12.5% allele frequency for wild barley. So we wanted to know, what is our mapping resolution going to be in this population? And so we measured linkage disequilibrium across the population in every single chromosome. So we can see here is the wild barley, the advanced back cross NAM population is shown in blue. The wild barley diversity collection, so just the set of accessions, is shown in orange. You can see that across the genome, and this is a two centimorgan sliding window, you can see that the advanced back cross NAM population has a little bit higher LD than the actual set of accessions, and a much lower LD than two different populations. One's an advanced back cross QTL population, it's a biparental population, and the other population is a standard real population. For all four of these populations, we looked at the exact same number of individuals with the exact same number of markers, and so everything is done in this very exactly the same way. When we look at it just a standard plot, we see that the AB NAM has LD decay of about 9 centimorgans, whereas the wild barley diversity collection is at less than half a centimorgan. The two recombinant inbred line sort of populations have LD decay at about 30 centimorgans. And so we've reduced the LD in the advanced back cross NAM population to the point where we can actually start mapping much finer resolution. When we looked at the entire population, all 800 or so lines, the LD decay was about 4.5 centimorgans in the advanced back cross NAM population. So we're actually getting to a point where we can actually map quite close to the gene itself. So we then did a bunch of different field trials, and this is through collaborations with Kevin Smith, Rich Horsley, as well as Tom Blake. There's five different environments at various places. We had looked at a variety of different agronomic traits, and the experimental design was an augmented design with replicated checks. So one of the first things we wanted to do was, can we actually map anything with this particular population? And what's the sort of genetic architecture or segregation patterns that we will be able to map? And so we noticed during the process of developing the population, that wild barley, as you can see in the middle, or wild type barley, as you can see in the middle, is gray, indicating that it has a lot of wax production along in the sheath and in the spike. Whereas we have found individuals that had lack of wax production in the sheath tissue, which is shown on the left, and also lack of wax production on the spike tissue, which is shown on the right. So those individual, or those, that particular phenotype that had lack of wax production on the sheath, there was only 3 families that showed that phenotype and 12 individuals. And we went to map that, we found a very strong signal at chromosome 3. And when we actually looked at the genome, we're actually very close to a set. The actual interval that that maps in is very, very small. And so we have a set of candidate genes that we can go after and try to clone that gene. This particular gene is coincident. This particular region is coincident with a set of mutant alleles for glossy sheath 2 and barley. So we have a whole set of mutant alleles that we can go in and sequence. On the other side, for the glossy spike sort of phenotype, we had 24 families and there are 109 individuals, and we could also easily map that particular QTL or region to chromosome 1H, and that also corresponds to a glossy spike mutant allele that we've been able to identify. So in both cases, we have a case where there's very few individuals that we are able to map, and another case there are many, many individuals we're also able to map. And they both allows both in both cases we're allowed to map to very, very fine map it quite well to get to the point where we can start looking at candidate genes. So we wanted to know then, could we map more quantitative sort of traits? And so we mapped heading date. You can see that there's lots and lots of lots and lots of hits here. And so every one of these triangles represents a significant SNP trait association. And the red actually indicates the negative effect of the wild barley allele, whereas the blue indicates the positive effect of the wild barley allele. And you can see in some cases we have positive and negative. In each case of all the QTL that we identified, they all correspond to a known barley gene that's been cloned and sequenced and characterized quite a lot. We also looked at QTL for a height and productive tiller number, and we found a QTL right on top of the coincident with a photoperiod gene, PPDH1. We also found a variety of other height QTL found across the genome. With regards to tiller number, we found just 2 different QTL, one on chromosome 4H, and then we found the same PPDH1 on QTL as well. For many of our morphological or agronomic traits that we studied, we found a region or a hit right on top of the PPDH1 gene. So we think this particular region has tremendous control over the growth and development of this particular population, at least in the environments that we're looking at. So we wanted to know, really, do any of the alleles of wild barley actually impact yield? And so from these 5 grow-outs, we found that Rasmussen is shown here in that solid red line. We have individuals that were very, very low in terms of yield. We have individuals that are reasonably high in terms of yield. So we have individuals that are about 2 to 3% above the Rasmussen mean, but they were not statistically significant, at least in these 5 different environments that these lines were grown in. So we wanted to know, also, are there any QTL for yield in this particular population? And well, yeah, we could detect QTL, but they're all negatively associated with the wild barley allele. And so the major QTL that we detected was a QTL located right at the brittle locus, which are 2 loci in that particular region. So you can imagine that as the plants shatter or they lose some seed, you're going to be able to map that compared to other things that don't shatter as much. So we found a variety of different QTL. They're all negatively impacted by the wild barley alleles. We also looked at test weight, but in the case of test weight, we did find a QTL on chromosome 1H that is positively impacted by the wild barley allele. So you can see right in the middle there on the QTL 1H that there are some slightly blue triangles in there. So we're thinking, okay, well, maybe there might be some sort of impact on yield when it comes to when we add wild barley alleles to these lines. And so we started collaborating with Kevin Smith's group with a talented graduate student, Tyler Teedy. And what they did was they took the top 50 yielding lines and used those as parents in 3 different scenarios. One of them was an idealized progeny value based on estimated breeding values. The other one is to just take the top 50 best lines, or just cross the best by best in those top 50 lines. And the other was to take the lines that had the greatest genetic distance and make crosses with those as well. So they used the ABNAM, or the Advanced Back Cross Nested Association Mapping Population, as the training population. as I said before, they have these three different sets of populations they're developed, and these populations were developed by crossing 16 individuals in each of the three. They then advanced these to the F3, and they then imposed genomic selection on them and then selected for 100 F4, F4-derived lines. Each of those 100 F4-derived F5 lines for each of the three scenarios were then planted in five locations in an augmented design with replicated checks this past summer. So the idea here is that we're going to be combining these various wild barley alleles so that we can get an increased yield. So we're originally taking the top set of lines and making crosses with those. So when we looked at the data, it looks actually somewhat encouraging. So the top line is 7% yield increase over Rasmussen. Unfortunately, that 7% is not statistically significant, at least at this point. And we have other lines that also show an increase in yield. The lines that showed the increase in yield were, in terms of where they're derived from the best by best, and the lines that were created through crossing the greatest genetic difference. So the estimated breeding value sort of approach did not result in the best lines in this particular in this study. So when you think about this, you start to wonder, okay, so what are the chances that a wild barley allele would actually impact cultivated barley? And the chances probably aren't that high, but we think that as we start combining these favorable alleles for yield, that we might eventually boost up the yield over the Rasmussen genotype. And we have some sort of promising results that would indicate that this might be happening. So in summary, we've used the wild barley diversity collection accessions, and we used them to create an advanced bat cross NAM population. And we used that to identify lines that were 90% or greater of the whole genetic variation to make this population. We showed that exhibits low LD, and we have the opportunity to examine wild barley alleles in a modern cultivar. We could map to candidate gene resolution, and so the example I showed were these waxy genes. And we could identify QTL for almost any trait we're interested in. And when we started looking at yield, well, we couldn't identify QTL for yield, but we found lines that did yield more. They were not significantly more, but I think there needs to be more work in terms of recombining favorable alleles to try to get higher yielding. And finally, this advanced bat cross NAM population represents a rich resource for mining new alleles and for barley improvement. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge many of the people that did the work. Leanna Nice was the one that developed the population and did all the characterization. Kevin Smith's group for all the growing materials out. Brian Stevenson for providing the materials. Tyler Teedy for the genomic selection sort of work. And a variety of other people that helped with genotyping as well as growing out the population. So with that, I'll stop and I'll take any questions that you might have. In the first round, when we just used the population itself, we saw about a 2-3% increase. But as I said, it was not statistically significant. And then when we did the genomic selection sort of approach, it looks to be about 7% top line. And once again, it was not significant. Yes, so we would have been able to generate a lot more lines in a much more efficient manner, but we wouldn't have been able to. The phenotyping in the field for things like yield and other sort of agronomic traits would have been more difficult. So it's a trade-off. So right now we're running a variety of screens for a variety of disease resistance traits, but that's the sort of thing that we would expect would have, we'd be able to find those. We know that the wild barley accessions carry a variety of resistance alleles for a variety of different pathogens, and so the expectation is we would be able to find those in the population. We're running that screening right now for several different rust races.
Thank you.
This one? I think that because there's so many deleterious alleles from wild barley, that's driving the yield down. That would be my guess.
Okay.
All right, thank you.